You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Build and protect personal wealth throughout your lifetime. Take the first step to financial happiness. Listen to The Road to Financial Freedom with Guy and Alicia Terrell of Terrell Financial Services, LLC. Heard every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific, Guy and Alicia will discuss key ideas and products designed to help you succeed and attain financial freedom. Above average people need above average advice on how to build their wealth. Find that and more on The Road to Financial Freedom with Guy and Alicia Terrell every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern, here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is to Linux or not to Linux. Our guest for today's show is Jürgen Geck. Jürgen joined SUSE in 1997 and served since early 2000 as Vice President Technology Partners. As Chief Technology Officer for SUSE Linux at Novell, Mr. Geck is responsible for aligning and communicating the SUSE Linux technology strategy for Novell. Mr. Geck helped design SUSE's flagship product, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, and its maintenance model, enabling the first enterprise Linux offering in the market. He was instrumental in the conception of Novell's YAST open source project, an open source systems management project that for the first time provides a platform on which to tie together disparate systems using current systems management tools. Good morning, Jürgen. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Okay, just for the listeners, Jürgen is calling from Germany near Frankfurt. What was the name of the town, Jürgen, again?
I'm currently in Aschaffenburg in front of a grocery store.
Okay. All right, so how's business?
It's doing great. It's just phenomenal. I never had in 8 years at SUSE and now Novell one negative line of feedback. It's just amazing how positive the reactions are, and the customers grow bigger and bigger. The deals grow more interesting all the time, and we're lucky enough to have the answer for all these questions. So, good start.
That's great. Now, you know, we all know that Linux started as a freebie, and you know, people were not interested in paying for it, of course, and they wanted to pay as minimum as possible. Now, especially for commercial use, there was an opportunity to repackage it and, you know, add more features and give a better control over the source code and just charge a little bit for that. Now, lately, the pricing of this repackaged Linux is basically on the rise. What are we doing here in terms of making sure that it does not rise to a level where it almost becomes similar to what people are used to paying for a proprietary operating system?
The answer to that is quite simple, competition, and competition on the same grounds. What you got to understand about Linux and the open source packages that we sell is that we don't sell the technology because we don't own it alone. Means we share the same technology foundation with our competition in that space. And what we sell really is the predictability, the consistency, and the support enablement for the technology that is available for free. Every one of our products in that space, all the SUSE Linux derivatives, are freely downloadable, no costs, no control points attached to that. What we sell is really only the ongoing responsibility for the code base that we provide, and that's quite a different model. So the price will never get out of hand, because as soon as we start to do something like that, somebody else will step up to that plate and take over.
So you are basically saying that any repackaged vendor's business model is primarily to give that level of relief, to not have these CTOs and CIOs have a sleepless night, saying that, you know, the thing that we are using as the backbone of our enterprise or as the de facto desktop operating system whenever it reaches that level is that they have a vendor which is going to support them in case there is an issue. They can actually call somebody and grab somebody's neck.
Absolutely. We are the neck to choke. And we are in a neck to choke, not only in support situations, but much, much, much before that. When we provide the roadmaps for our next upcoming release, we commit to that roadmap, we commit to the components in there, and we make Linux predictable. At the time of release, we have a fully consistent package of various components of software. It's not just Linux. It's the compiler technology underneath. It's the hardware architecture compliance. It's the software certificates. It's the solutions that are in there, from web services components to all the way down to desktop components. And this consistency is certainly another part that makes Linux the offering that it is. And after that time, of course, we commit to something like 7 years of maintenance and ongoing support availability for that exact base.
So this whole repackaging concept, was this more like a demand which was from the CTO, CIOs, and other customers, or was this seen as a business opportunity?
Well, when we started at SUSE to build Linux distributions, the company, SUSE Linux AG, was founded in 1992, so very early on in the game. And what we've been shipping until 2000 as our only product line was SUSE Linux, which is really only making 4,000 packages of software a consistent offering that can be installed and deployed from one end to another with a really straight focus to get all that variety of components onto your hard disk. Now, in 2000, we changed the model rather drastically when we started to work with IBM to support their mainframe environment. And, of course, the kind of customers you meet in that space have a totally different kind and a totally different set of demands and requirements for a product like that. So we had to add something like roadmaps. We had to add something like support commitments over time. And these two components were not there in Linux before we started doing that in 2000. And there was clearly a demand from the market side to come up with something like that. And only since then has Linux really become an operating system that can be compared to commercial alternatives in that regard. It's not from a technology, but from a product perspective.
So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you've worked with IBM, and I'm also trying to see what is the overall Linux landscape looking, how are even the other repackaging vendors are thinking, and, you know, how they are getting their feedback. I'm pretty sure they must also be getting feedback from the same channels as you must be getting. Now, the overall trend that we have seen is while the big enterprises are also looking at Linux as a viable option for a backbone operating system and even as a desktop, the same holds true for somewhat small to mid-sized businesses as well. So what is the difference in strategy or difference in feedback that you receive from the two parties? One was like the big blue-chip companies versus the small to mid-sized companies.
Well, the big blue-chip companies are in there for mainly two reasons. One is the ego-driven side, where they need to have an alternative, where they need to have something independent of Microsoft to start with. The other one is clearly cost reduction. In the mid-range and smaller business environment, what is not so easy to get outside of the Linux environment is fully open standards and standards-compliant components. What I mean by saying that is, if you have a standard document, for example, on oasis-open.org, it's very likely that any one vendor will have their own understanding what compliance with that standard means. Now, how would you find out whether Microsoft is really compliant with such a standard? You can only hope to be in good hands there. What you can do with open source is to look for yourself how far that standard compliance goes. You can even contribute and become part of the team that establishes the standard.
All right. Now, let me ask you a question just as we try to get into the break. You know, we all look at the repackaging vendors like SUSE from Novell. They're all working with a common kernel. Then what is the difference that, or how can one repackaging vendor differentiate against the other?
It's really hard to understand you with the music in the background.
Yes, and you know, we will go right into the break, and when we come back, we will discuss about these special differentiating factors. So, listeners, please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. Improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra, broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Every organization has two complementary yet competing organizing structures, the hierarchy, or org chart, and the network, the web of informal but trusted relationships. You can see and measure the org chart, but how do you measure and assess the network? On Mining Your Networks with Dr. Karen Stevenson, you'll learn how to measure your network, improve it, and find new ways to take it to the next level. Get the good, the bad, and the ugly on today's networks. Listen to Minding Your Networks with Dr. Karen Stevenson every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on the Bottom Line of Business, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Are you tired of sitting on the bench? Are you ready to get in the game? Then join David Hayes and Jim Inman every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern for The Coach, exclusively on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. The Coach is a program by financial professionals for financial professionals. Know the techniques used on the field by top financial professionals for personal and professional success. Get off the bench and join The Coach every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, live on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is to Linux or not to Linux. Our guest for today's show is Juergen Geck. Juergen is the Chief Technology Officer for SUSE Linux at Novell. Before the break, we were discussing the different the common kernel that is being used as the baseline for all the different repackaging vendors who are trying to add their own flavors. And what is the differentiating factor, and how can a potential user choose that which one to go with? So, Jürgen?
As in most cases, choosing a vendor is a matter of trust, and especially in Linux, where the differentiation is clearly in the process capabilities around the technology and not so much in what kind of technology you finally have end up on your CD, the same applies here. When you look at the kernel that other Linux players ship and ours, it's probably pretty much the same, aside from the fact that we have a long, long track record, being 8 years, of building all our Linux distribution offerings fully automatically. That means that we have a very high level of trust for ourselves to start with, but we can rely on ourselves to get the basics out of the way without really thinking too much about them, so that we can be closer to the bleeding edge, so that we can be more predictable in terms of quality levels and comprehensiveness in terms of packages contained and the flexibilities that come from cleanly integrating all these packages.
So you're saying that the level of differentiation that you can do, is this not going to be always like a catch-up game where one vendor plays against others, because there's only so much fine-tuning you can do, or so many functionality or you know, scalability-related performance enhancements that can be done to a common kernel?
That is absolutely true, and for an open-source background, that is what applies. But then what you got to consider is that the Linux kernel is merely one package out of the 4,000 that we currently have under maintenance. Now, just to make these figures a bit more impressive, the 4,000 packages that we have on our end-user technology product, which is just a snapshot of what we do, which we bring out every half a year and what we call SUSE Professional, these packages can be rebuilt automatically, and that's what we do on a daily to weekly basis, within 8 hours. Just imagine 4,000 disparate packages of the Internet being prepared by 200 developers to fit to each other nicely, and then automatically being processed into a CD or a DVD that really is a homogeneous offering. That's really the power of what we bring to the table. And when we apply the same technology to our server product lines with a stripped-down set of packages where we're looking at something like 600 open-source projects being bundled into software packages, being put onto a CD with the same kind of process, that is really what we bring to the table. It's not so much about, hey, what can we tweak and twist out of the kernel? That is part of what we do, just to join the Linux community in enhancing the kernel and furthering the evolution. It's really the assembly and the putting together of all these packages. Now, this is pretty much what everybody in the industry has mastered to some degree. We consider ourselves a leader, and analyst companies like Gartner give us a 12 to 18-month head start over our closest competitor in the evolution of this infrastructure component, enabling us to build all these capabilities. But what really people are more and more concerned with, rather than with getting the product in the first place, is managing the product. And what we did was to, earlier this year at BrainShare in April, release our systems management infrastructure that we had built for the client systems management client enablement, which is what we call YAST, yet another setup tool, YAST, under an open source license, under GPL. And what that does is it enables all the Linux components, all the Linux-based components in the SUSE Linux offering to be managed from a single API, meaning that we don't really compete with the likes of our own SendWorks product or Tivoli or UniCenter or whatever you might have there in terms of management consoles, but rather with their client enablement strategies. When you look at TCO studies, the majority of costs in IT goes into systems management. And that is not so much because the systems management consoles are so expensive, but rather because there's no established standard to this day where all IT components out there could be managed consistently and from one end. And that's exactly what we want to enable with open source, and that's just another application of the same concepts that have made Linux successful.
Now, let's look at somewhat on the desktop side. We have been looking at Linux, you know, over the years, and it has tried to come out with, or maybe, you know, the different software publishers who tried to build what a Microsoft Office is to Windows, is what they are trying to come up with, the Star Office and other products. the overall look and feel and the way they're trying to approach it looks like as if they were mimicking what is already out for Windows and other, you know, known operating systems, and like say Mac, for example. So is this always going to be a catch-up game, or is there a radical direction that these guys would want to take to say, okay, now this is an opportunity for us to totally do some R&D and come out with something which is even more intuitive and not follow what the other operating systems and their corresponding tools are doing?
It's absolutely both. When you compare what we did 4 years ago in taking what we had on the desktop and taking it to the very high end to go for mainframes, and when you look at the same code base of SUSE Linux being certified for desktops as well as for 512 CPU Itanium clusters from SGI, that is a very radical and very innovative new step to have the same operating platform on both ends, on the mid-range server as well as on the high end. Now, coming back to desktops, what Linux has been invented as really is the desktop environment for Linus Torvalds. So Linux on a desktop is really nothing new. It's something pretty old. It's just a matter of making it useful, not just for the Linus Torvalds of the world, but for everybody out there and every end user. And to get there, we certainly will have to mimic what is the established desktop environment in the marketplace just to get to the user in the first place, because if we came up with something totally different today, nobody would be able to probably use it in the same kind of routine that people are, well, adjusted to. Now, with that as a foundation going forward, we will be able to do new and better concepts, because what we will be able to do rather sooner than later is to run not only on your usual machine like your considering a computer today with a monitor and a keyboard and some box behind it or some server environment somewhere off in some compute center, but rather on mobile devices like mobile phones and such. And the trick is going to be to do the same again that we did 4 years ago, to keep the same practices, to keep the same foundation, to keep the same technology on this smaller footprint kind of devices as well. And if people doubt that we can do it, I think what we have done so far shows clearly that we have a unique capability to be as flexible as I'm claiming here, because that's what we're living on in a daily basis from, as I said, desktop mid-range server to the very high end. What we're working on is to get our infrastructure enabled to really reduce the footprint of our systems to be able to get all that standard operating environment that we have established so far down to the smaller devices. The key is not so much to have another offering for that kind of device, like Microsoft tries to do with WinCE, which is something completely different from the usual operating systems, but having exactly the same kind of operating environment so that applications can migrate seamlessly to that kind of devices and users can take their data with them. Now, if we assume that something like that will happen, and I strongly assume that because that's what we're working on, then it becomes key to have identity management to really make the user the focal point of whatever is going on these devices and in all these ecosystems, and that's where Novell dwells. And that's what makes it a totally perfect complement from what we've been talking so far to the product range that we bring to that table from the other end. That, I don't want to make that a product pitch.
Now, let me ask you this. When we talk about the overall approach to evolution of Linux, is it safer to say that right now we are more in gaining acceptance mode versus grabbing market share mode?
I think the acceptance is there. I'm just coming back from a very large customer here in Germany who runs probably the biggest SAP installation you could possibly imagine, and they're getting more and more Linux in there. Now, the challenge really is to not only get the acceptance in terms of, yes, we want to look into that, yes, we want to do that, but really roll it out and get the routines into people. Just like where we were talking about desktops before, it's not so much a challenge to get a fully usable desktop in front of an end user. I'm using my Linux desktop on and off since, well, the early days of me getting in front of computers, and that's quite a while. But the challenge really is to change people's behavior and adjust people's expectations. In some regards, that is like people being used to speaking only one language and well, nowadays, we at least have to adjust to English on top of it, and I hope to have Linux at one point just as common as speaking English.
So let's look at those common standards which could be used. Now, while we are competing for the market share, or at least if nothing else, forget the Windows and the Macs, at least within the repackaged Linux software which is being sold right now, we are talking about the Linux vendors working on a common kernel, but at the same time, there has to be some effort in making things standard, because unless otherwise we do that, we will see everybody touting their own product, and the users will be the ones who would suffer. So what's being done in that regard?
I don't see this whole forking discussion really going anywhere. When you look at Linux, there's always... And just take Linux as an example. We can make the same argument for desktop environments to start with. But let's take Linux as an example. There's always this argument that Linux might fork, and there might be, at one point in time, 20 Linuxes, just like there used to be 20 Unixes at one point in time. This argument doesn't hold, because where other alternatives, like the Unix environment, for example, have been split because of financial reasons, that will never happen with Linux. What am I talking about? If you have something available for free, it does not make any sense whatsoever to come up with the same solution again in a commercially viable environment. That's why the commercial Unix vendors are walking away from their products, and why, while people like IBM, for example, are still behind AIX, their Linux commitment is clearly foreseeable. So in other words, things are going to consolidate.
That's great. Let's, pick up this topic more in detail when we come back from the break, listeners. So please stay tuned, and we will try to delve into what can be done to basically demythify this whole concept, as Jürgen already mentioned, that, people are thinking that there would be 20 different flavors. So one is that there is some problem. There is some myths to it. While that is true, how can we get rid of it and make people understand and feel safer that they will not end up having 20 different flavors? So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages and discuss this topic in a greater detail.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Politics and business go hand in hand. To find out how, tune into the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. The Tammy Says Show will feature informative and influential guests involved in the political world, as well as some of today's top business leaders. So tune in every Monday and get your questions answered as she cuts to the chase in the issues that affect your bottom line. That's the Tammy Says Show every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk Radio, BusinessAmerica.com.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You've probably heard it before. After the end of a relationship, a kindly friend will offer those famous words of support. There are plenty of fish in the sea. Well, that kindly friend is wrong, dead wrong, because the fact is many fish are declining in number, and unlike other things, there's actually something you can do about it. Simply log on to GetGreen.com to learn how making the right seafood choices can help keep our oceans healthy and full of fish. It's easy to do, and now that you're single and lonely, you got the time. That's GetGreen.com, a message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, our topic for today's show is to Linux or not to Linux. Our guest for today's show is Jürgen Geck. Jürgen is the Chief Technology Officer for SUSE Linux at Novell. Now, we were talking before the break is the common standards that should be there so that we have a reliable product. Now, Jürgen did mention before the break is that there is a lot of myth about us getting into a fork mode where we will have 20 different flavors of Linux, and which is a typical myth that kind of floats around. One is that we have to get rid of that myth, and secondly, we have to make sure that whatever they are saying does not come true. So, Jürgen, what do you think is the strategy to demythify this, what's going on here, and how do you plan on controlling?
Well, it's really a very, very easy answer. Just consider that the technology itself is for free, and as the technology is for free, there's no opportunity whatsoever to sell it as a licensed product. If you don't have that chance to sell it as a licensed product, to come up with another alternative doesn't make any sense. So, in other words, if you have something that is better than Linux is today to contribute, either you're going to make Linux better or, well, you're going to have a problem. In other words, if you contribute to Linux, Linux will get stronger, not whatever your contribution is. And that is going to lead to a standardization and not to a forking issue.
Now, coming back to this desktop about, like, you know, one thing which you very rightly said, in fact, you know, that kind of opens up some eyes that why to try to come up with a radical desktop, you know, user interface, and people are used to something, at least come close to that and then try to further enhance it. That's a very good point. Now, when we are looking at the overall evolution of that, we've seen that the Linux repackage vendors are what they're trying to do is while they're concentrating on making Linux more robust and making it more feature-rich, as far as the UI is concerned, that's being handed over to third parties mostly, and that could potentially be, you know, jeopardizing the overall evolution of this, because as we see in other operating systems, they have always kept a very tight control on while they have a great operating system or whatever they're doing in terms of making it more robust, they've also kept a very good control and a very methodical approach to going to the next level of evolution in terms of the ease of use, user interface design, and things like that. So the current approach of keeping them these two things separate, do you think is it going to hinder the evolution of UI at least?
I wouldn't really necessarily say that we keep things separate. I think it's more what you see there, a result of Linux being a really highly modular environment where a lot of people cooperate. In fact, the open source concept, the open source paradigm enables that cooperation. So, one result is that you have a very well-integrated environment. Another result is that you have a variety of solutions to some of the problems. And I think we're getting to the point where we're talking about GNOME and KDE. And there you have two choices out there. Now, what you need to adopt the one or other alternative in that space is a platform that is available for a length of time. And we just released Novell Linux Desktop, which is going to be around for at least 5 to 7 years. And with that specific product for that lifetime, that means that we have a platform now as a successor to SUSE Linux Desktop, which has been out in the market for 1.5 years and was kind of the first of its kind in that regard, where ISVs can adjust to this desktop environment, that specific one, not just any one, not just one flavor, but a product that comes with support, that comes with vendor commitment, and that comes with maintenance over time. Now, which one of the two desktop environments that are shipped in that Novell Linux desktop offering, KDE or GNOME, will survive and succeed in the end? I don't dare an answer to that, because there's advantages in both worlds, and it will have to be seen over time what the ISV community adjusts themselves to. Just to give you an example, we have a very closely integrated personal information management environment, infrastructure you could say, on the KDE desktop in the Novell Linux desktop environment, where you can connect to Outlook, where you can connect to GroupWise, where you can connect to open source alternatives or our famous SUSE Linux Open Exchange Server product. That is the one side of things. On the other hand, you have GNOME, where you have a lot of industry support, where you have IBM and Sun and a lot of other people doing a lot of work for that desktop as well. And we will see what pays off in the end. The more, how would I say, structured engineering in KDE, or the more rapid pace, open source, fully open, rapid prototyping approach in GNOME, both has its merits. And we now have a platform where these merits can come to bloom and where the IT industry at large really finally has a chance to adjust to such a product. Because what we most of the time forget when talking about open source and open source technology is that there's a huge difference between a product with a company behind it on the one hand side and technology on the other hand.
But do you think the end user should care about that? I mean,
I don't think so, and I don't think that end users really care about it. I'm just trying to explain the playing field that we're looking at, and the end user finally will look at the applications, just like on the server, and make their decisions regarding to the based on the applications that the end user requires. That is also the driver why we don't position that Novell Linux desktop as a full front assault against Microsoft or anything of these along these lines, but rather as a specific solution for customers where it's good enough today, where you need an office environment, where you need a groupware environment, where you need communications and very basic functionality on a desktop. And for that, the answer is good enough and is more than good enough today already. To have a generic gaming platform for your high-end hobby user, it's not necessarily the one that you want to go for if you're not so deep into technology that Linux is really the thing that has no alternative.
No, one thing was, of course, then we looked at, the GUI part that we discussed. The second thing is, any success of any operating system or success of any environment would actually come where the more developers, the more integration partners are there, and the more people who are building solutions for it, that automatically says, okay, this is the underlying operating system, and there are so many good solutions, and it runs on this operating system, let's buy that. So what is being done to encourage that development, like for Linux-based products and solutions, for enterprise and for desktop?
Well, to start with, and that's what I tried to say earlier, we have a product out there now, a product that is going to live for a long, long time, where without such a product offering as a baseline platform, what chance is there for an ISV to support Linux? If you have a moving target out there that might or might not have the same API tomorrow, where are you, right? Especially when it comes to integration partners that you mentioned and their money requirements, they will have to adjust themselves to a product, not just to technology, because they want to do something today and they want to sell it tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and next year and 5 years from now, hopefully, as well. And that is not going to be possible if they take a snapshot of technology today that is going to be totally different next week. So that is one basic enabler. To not only be an enabler, but really to motivate people, I think what we got to do is to be as open as can be. Open on the building side, meaning the manufacturing side of the software, open on the management side of the software, and open in the integration environment where we can really counter what Microsoft has to offer with truly open standards. Microsoft, for example, will never have any interest whatsoever to open up their data formats fully for their office environment. When you look at an open source-based environment like OpenOffice, for example, you have that today. There's people out there who work to get the OpenOffice file format that's now a standard on oasis-open.org to become an ISO standard. That is unheard of. that is only possible on open source foundations. That can't be done from a vendor perspective like Microsoft, because if Microsoft were to be fully standard compliant, Microsoft would take a lot of their lock-in with the customers away.
So let's try to see what you just said in terms of encouraging the development of Linux-based products and solutions. So you're saying the folks who actually go and develop products and solutions on Linux platform, they would look for, of course, a stability and somewhat predictability of what they are going to see in terms of next 5 or 10 years, so that the product that they make this year is not obsolete the next year. That's one area. The other thing is that, incentivizing them somehow. Just give them some kind of an incentive for them to go ahead and say, okay, now this is the, this is a benefit that I'm going to get. Because they're in business of making software products. And, of course, underlying software platforms or operating system platforms that they need to support, they need to feel, there's going to be some reward for them. So what is being done from that standpoint?
Well, to start with the cost angle again, mm-hmm. because if you have an open source platform like, for example, this downloadable Novell Linux desktop that you don't have to pay us for in the first place just to get the product out, you can really reduce your bottom line in front of your customer. If you have a solution stack that doesn't really charge for the underlying operating system and for the office environment, you can do a lot of integration on top without really hurting your price point that is acceptable in the marketplace.
Now, what do you think is a CTO looking at when he or she is looking at Linux to be the next de facto standard for their enterprise servers, for that matter, and or for desktop?
Well, one example of such a CTO is somebody that I talked to only yesterday. And something that he wasn't aware of before is that with something like open source and open office and a truly standardized file format, he can get rid of all his archiving costs for Microsoft software to be able to read all the old documents that he has installed somewhere. If you have a fully standard compliant file format foundation that you can build your business on, you don't have to store away all the software, because the standards compliance data that you have on your hard disk and on your backup media will be readable 10 years down the road and 20 years down the road still, because it's clearly documented what's in there. With Microsoft, you only stand a chance if you keep all the old software around, which is a real challenge, because you don't need to keep the old software around, but you need also the hardware for the old software. So if we're looking at longer time frames, for example, necessary in the public sector, just to store your data, it's not enough. You have to store all the compute environment as well. You will have to store the hardware. You will have to store the software running on that hardware, which is clearly not always possible. In other words, you seriously expose your data if you stay on a closed source environment, if you're looking longer term.
So you're basically saying that while that's a genuine problem, people, when they will have to end up going and retrofit their data to a common platform, going forward, the same platform or the same format, data format, would be the one which will end up become the de facto standard for all, say, Linux-based or even the other operating system vendors might want to follow. But, yeah, let's
exactly.
take this topic further when we come back from the break, listeners. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
One aspect of the American dream is a safe and decent place to live that fits within each person's financial capabilities. Based on the individual and the community, home may have very many different meanings. discussion on housing issues, log on and listen to Let's Talk Affordable Housing with Ginger Miller every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business, Voice America Business.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is to Linux or not to Linux. Our guest for today's show is Jürgen Geck. Jürgen is the Chief Technology Officer for SUSE Linux at Novell. Before the break, we actually were discussing about a very, very interesting point that Jürgen brought up, was the common format that is needed for companies which are in a bind that they have got data sitting, like some archives sitting there from like 10, 20 years ago. And in order for them to be able to access that data, they need to carry the hardware, the corresponding software, and operating system, everything. And that is a huge cost, fixed cost to carry. So that's where we are talking about Linux to be coming to help. So, Jürgen, can you please extend your thoughts on that?
Well, what we have there basically is the opportunity to rely on fully openly documented standard. And what I'm talking about is not just some piece of paper detailing the facts there, but really the code being open and everybody being in a position to look at it and see what happens to the data. If you're locked in with a closed source environment to access your data in the first place, you're never going to be really standing a chance to be absolutely secure to be able to come back and revisit that data 10 years, 20 years down the road. You, in fact, even today, have to pay the respective vendor to get access to your own data. Think about it. What you're paying for in the end with a closed-source environment like Microsoft is access to your data, to your very own data, not Microsoft, your data.
Now, let me ask you about the TCO of Linux, because, you know, I think that is one of the areas where we see, people have...
Sorry, folks, that's modern communications for you. I'm back.
So I was just asking you a question about the TCO of Linux, because, you know, that is basically, that's one of the biggest concern of people is, while it is a very stable platform, but the point where people have to maintain support and have new development initiatives, ongoing initiatives that are to be undertaken, they see a lot of cost at that time, and that's what is kind of scaring them. And that is, to some extent, is the demand-supply issue, where we do not have as many people who are trained in this and not as many companies who can readily come and give a solution and be able to maintain it. So what is being done? How are you guys as repackaged Linux vendors even helping, getting rid of that fear in consumers' mind?
Okay, let me try to tackle your question in two steps. One part is the cost, one part is the people and the qualification. Talking about the cost, I fully agree with Microsoft that there's cost associated to maintaining and supporting a Linux environment. Guess what? That's nothing new. The cost associated to that is basically the same cost associated to a closed-source environment. All that we do is to get completely rid of all the license costs involved. In other words, where you have license, maintenance, and support with a closed-source environment, you only have maintenance and support in Linux. In other words, you only pay for two out of three components. And then there's people out there who try to, how would I say, malinform the market that that might be or should be more expensive than the whole package. That is simply not true. So the cost point, I don't buy into that. Linux should be more expensive at any point in time ever. Just doesn't make any sense. When it comes to the qualification and the people available for Linux, when you look at universities, what you generally find staring your way is Linux. 90% of all these people growing out of the educational system come from a Linux perspective. And that is quite understandable, because how can you learn to really build systems if you're not allowed to look at them? Sure enough, you can get all kinds of access to all kinds of products from Microsoft, but all that access has a certain amount of hurdles, a lot of obstacles attached to them, whereas with Linux, you just go and grab it from the Internet. But you don't have to ask anybody. You don't have to get any permission first. The permission is there in the first place. You just can go and look. And that's very, very useful in an educational environment. So we see quite the contrary of that myth that there's no qualification around the Linux. There's a lot of people coming out of university anywhere on the planet, from India to China to Germany, US, wherever, who know about Linux, and they know a lot about Linux, much more than they could ever have known about a Microsoft environment.
Now, one thing which we have to look at is security, especially in the U.S. You know, security is the thing which people are looking at. And given this market, what is being done to allay some of these fears related to how Linux is handling, how many holes does it have as compared to other operating systems which are out there?
There's a funny analyst report out there that claims that Microsoft is more secure because Microsoft fixed more bugs in the same amount of time. Think about it. That just means that there were more bugs in Microsoft to start with. When you look at Linux, there's a lot of issues and a lot of talk around license issues, patent issues. By the way, we indemnify customers against something like that, but that's not the point I want to make. There's a lot of talk about security and holes and everything. Guess what? Open source and closed source are just the same in that regard. It's just that in open source, people have a chance to fix it, look at it with their own eyes, and find it in the first place and get rid of these holes. So open source, to start with, has a very much more credible stance in claiming security. Next thing is, security is not a static issue. Security is a process. You start off with a certain level of security, and you can believe me or you can believe Mr. Ballmer, but it's certainly something that you've got to start with in either case. And then it depends on how you're going to proceed from there on to make your system secure. Now, we have announced the first EAL certification for a Linux environment, and we're working to extend that certification to a level of 4+, which is going to be, again, a first in the industry. With that in mind, what that means is we have documented and clearly shown to the respective authorities the capabilities to fully transparently build a Linux environment in a secure and trustable way. Security has a couple of facets. One discussion out there that I find very, very interesting all the time is the whole discussion around trust. When you think about trust and trust into a system like an operating environment, how can you claim trust in something that you can't look at? How would it be possible to trust an environment where just one company has access to the resources in there? With Linux, you have many, many more shoulders, meaning millions of shoulders, that you can build that trust upon. And I think that's a much more trustworthy approach than just have one company making a marketing statement about it.
Now, would the security of, like, you know, how the security is built and how secure the Linux environment is, does that have any bearing, or could it be adversely affected by the fact that there are so many developers all around the planet who are developing this, and, you know, whatever repackaging vendors are doing it, they are becoming the convergence point where could deal with all the code that is written, and not sure if there's a malintention or an unintentional security hole that is left in there. I mean, how do you think is that affecting the fact that you've got so many different developers who are not even, you don't even control those developers?
Well, I agree with what you said up until your last statement, because we clearly control these developers. There's two parts to the answer. One is peer review. You have a lot of people watching each other's steps, and somebody who tries to do something that doesn't make any sense from a security or any other perspective will not get anywhere. The other thing is, many people consider the Linux community and the open source community at large to be a rather chaotic and unsorted and unstructured bunch of people doing something, which is not true. Open source doesn't have to do much with communism, aside from the free availability of resources, but rather with a very, very strict and rather capitalistic way of thinking about things. When you look at the open source project, there's always a package maintainer who's responsible of making sure, no, not really make, responsible of making sure, but who carries the responsibility for a project. And this package maintainer has a couple of trusted peers who, in some cases, in more complex environments, like, for example, the Linux kernel, have the responsibility for subparts of that environment, that respective package of software, and so on. It breaks down into a pyramid of people that are very well structured and that are very, very focused from a control perspective to, in the end, one person being the package maintainer. You can't get any more focused in any closed-source environment. That's, by the way, one of the reasons why we're using open-source concepts inside of Novell and where we're using the same out-of-build environment that we have developed at SUSE for all the Novell products now. Open source is a very predictable and very, very well-structured way of developing things. So I would doubt both points.
Now, at the same time, what do you think is the speed of evolution going to get affected by when we say that we are working in terms of a controlled development environment?
Open source frees up resources, and that can be used for either one, saving money or driving innovation.
So now another thing which we should quickly answer here is the fact that, you know...
Sorry, I can't hear you properly.
Okay. What I'm trying to say is that there is a common understanding, and maybe you can say a common underlying strategy that, you know, the repackaged Linux vendors are adopting to foster growth in market share and better acceptance by the community. But what is that?
Didn't get your last sentence. Sorry, it's too loud in the background.
Okay, I'll just repeat the question. What is the common underlying strategy repackaged Linux vendors are adopting to foster growth in market share and better acceptance by the business community?
Oh, that's standardization, LSB and that stuff. Having a common platform, having a common foundation so that you can really take one solution from that runs on one vendor's offering onto another one.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd like to thank you, Jürgen, for sharing your insights about the value of adopting Linux in an enterprise and what is being done by repackaged Linux vendors to make sure that Linux becomes the de facto standard in the times to come. Now, there is no doubt that Linux promises significant upfront cost savings on licensing fees, as well as the stable operating system, which can become the backbone of an enterprise. Now, the focus of prepackaged Linux vendors is to make it easier to install and add more functionality. However, the proliferation and, say, the wide acceptance by business community will only be possible when they see the ongoing maintenance and support is easier as well. Now, what will make Linux popular? I think it should be helping foster growth of the software publishers who agree to write software for Linux, maybe develop creative partnership and certification programs that attract the integration partners and software developers to embrace Linux, and finally, make the operating systems and related applications easier to use since the end user needs to feel comfortable using the system. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sun Jogal next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.